Hello, I'm Curtis Bowers, and this is Agenda Weekly. Thank you so much for joining me again this week. I really appreciate it. Thank you to subscribers for being a part of what we do. We appreciate it greatly. This week, I'm going to be traveling to Milwaukee to talk at a preacher's conference, which will be great, and then down to Fredericksburg, Texas, to be at a Tea Party group down there. So we're looking forward to that. Because of that, I'm recording this today on Monday, and I'll send it out to you all this Friday night. So I'm doing it ahead of time because I'll be out of town. So I thought of something different I might do. I might have a powwow. And I don't know what that means to different people, but in our family, we used to say, oh, when we need to get together and talk about a bunch of different things, we'd say, let's have a powwow. So we're going to have the first ever Agenda Weekly powwow. But I'm going to just talk about a variety of really important things. Things I just jotted down this weekend that came to mind that I thought, that's important. I want to make sure everyone understands some of these different concepts or principles. And anyway, I hope it'll be a blessing to you. Those watching on Rumble, please like and follow. That's a great blessing to us. And those that are not subscribers to Agenda Weekly, if you appreciate these videos, I think you would love the rest of the information we provide each week in a news brief, prayer and action items, educational videos and articles and different things. And if you'd like to join, you go to agendaweekly.com. It costs $5 a month, but it helps then us have the funds available to keep doing the things that we're doing. So, but anyway, appreciate you all being there, and I hope this will be a blessing to you. The first thing I was reminded of this weekend is something that's really important if you're interested in learning and understanding and wanting to maximize your time and everything in life. And a lot of this you might know, but first off, how important it is to be reading good books. And I know most of you know that. But a book, if you look at it, it's someone who's taken maybe a couple years and researched a particular topic and then wrote a book on it saying, here's what I found out to be true about this. And so you can condense their 2 years of research into maybe 20 or 30 hours in reading their book. That's an excellent thing to do. When I made Agenda, all of a sudden something dawned on me. A documentary film is someone taking a couple years, but they're studying or interviewing 25, 30 different people who have spent maybe their lifetimes studying a particular topic. And I remember when I was done with Agenda, I thought, oh my goodness, all the people I've interviewed for this, they've spent over 1,000 years combined to research this topic, what's happened to our country. And then I'm just taking just the nuggets from them and putting it into a documentary film. So when you watch it in 90 minutes, it's just an hour and a half, you're getting so much. And so I just want to encourage you to learn the smart way, the simple way from others. But books are great, but documentaries are even better because they're consolidating an entire topic or field of study or whatever down into 90 minutes and just giving you the nuggets so you're not wasting your time on. I read hundreds of books for Agenda. And a lot of them were great, but a lot of them were okay, and maybe just found one nugget in the book or whatever. So anyway, I just wanted to encourage you. That's one of the best ways to learn, watching documentary films on specific topics. And then, of course, reading books is always wonderful because they're saving you the 2 years of research or whatever and just giving you, here's what I found out. These last couple weeks, as you know, college campuses are disintegrating all over. Well, my sister sent me a flyer that she came across. It's being distributed at all these meetings on college campuses. And it's, of course, by a communist organization. It's the Revolutionary Communists of America. But they're wanting to maximize a communist program for escalating the Gaza Solidarity Movement. You know, organize the Intifada. It's really amazing. They take advantage of everything. But in here, they talk about a few things that's pretty interesting. The majority should dictate how society is run. Yeah, Karl Marx, genius. What and how things are produced and distributed, and this includes all institutions of higher education. they're encouraging the young people to take over their university, get rid of all administration, all bureaucracy, and just have the students dictate this is what this college is going to be all about. It's unbelievable. Here's another thing they say that's just classic Marxist communist strategy. Daily mass assemblies at each encampment should be organized to debate and decide on concrete ways to sustain the movement and draw in an ever-widening layers of workers and students. They're always into using the useful idiots in organizing and building momentum. They're incredible at it. That's why our country is where it is today. But anyway, it goes through this. It says, properly coordinating and expanding the movement has the potential to surpass the historic 2020 uprising that followed the police murder of George Floyd. With the presidential elections just months away and the DNC in Chicago in August, there's no reason for finals or the end of the semester to take the wind out of our sails. Now is the time to spread it to campuses, the city streets, workplaces across the country. Good old communists, I'll talk more about that in a little bit, but they don't miss a trick. And the end goal is always a revolution. You have to know that. They do many things like they've been doing for 60, 70 years to get the culture prepared to accept a revolution. And I'll get into some of that. But anyway, I was shocked when I saw that. My son Christian and some of my other boys this weekend, they ran a Spartan race. Christian ran the one that was a 50K race. It was 34 miles, and he'd never done something like that. But he learned some things in it, and I wanted to share those with you. He said the first 10, 15 miles was going great, pushing it. And he said at about mile 20, his body just said, no more, you're done. And he said, so I had to then, for every step I was going, every thing I was doing, I had to, no, you need to take another step. No, you have to keep going. You have 14 miles to go, even though you're exhausted. But he said, I had to do it one step at a time, convince my body, no, keep going. You have to keep going. And I just thought, that's life. You have to keep going. Doing what God has asked us to do, standing for the truth, influencing those around us. I'm tired. One step at a time, one day at a time. It's just so vital. My pastor this weekend gave a great sermon on Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. And it's, of course, the verses that says, present your body a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. After what he has done on that cross, to shed his blood to forgive our sins, it's reasonable to be a living sacrifice. But he also talked about then, a living sacrifice is hard to keep on the altar. It's not like in the Old Testament, they'd kill the animal and then throw it on the altar and it'd sit there. This is a living sacrifice. We're giving him our life and our flesh is going to battle that every single day. Say, no, I want to get off that altar and do what I want to do. And we have to, just like Christian did in that race, say, no, one step at a time, one more step, one more step, one more step. And by the way, as a proud papa, that's not the point of things, but he came in first place in the whole thing. And I was so proud of him, but he learned so much from it. He said, everything I do that's less than this the rest of my life will seem like a piece of cake. And I thought, that's the way life is. The first 4 years I had a job when I was young, 14 to 18 years old, I was washing dishes. And if you've ever done that for 8 hours leaning over a sink where your back is hurting so bad, and I was talking to him about that and saying, I know I remember that. It was where I had to cheerfully go, yeah, my back is killing me, but I have to do it again tomorrow and the next day and the next day. But I'm so grateful for it. I am so grateful. Every job I've ever had since 18 years old of those 4 years of washing dishes has been like paid vacation. It's like a joke. It's like nothing compared to that where your back starts hurting 10 minutes into it and you still have 7 hours and 50 minutes of leaning over scrubbing in this hot kitchen as fast as you can because the dishes are pouring back. But anyway, whatever you've had to go through in life like that or what you're going through right now, especially young people, be thankful for it. It gives you perspective. It gives you the ability to have a grateful heart in all circumstances. And anyway, I was thankful that he learned that in the race and proud of him for working so hard to accomplish that. We need to be doing hard things. We need to whip the flesh into subjection. It's always going to want to get off the altar, always want to stop now. I'm just too tired. And we need to say no. And some good ways to work at teaching it you're the boss is, of course, fasting, exercise, eating healthy. When your body says, oh, I want some donuts, you're like, no, you're going to have broccoli and a salad or whatever. But the more you can whip it into subjection, the greater victories you're going to have in your life and the greater your ability will be to follow the Lord, because he demands that we submit even when we don't want to. But when we're faithful in that, he is so good and so faithful to do abundantly above all that we would ever dream. We need to say no to junk. We need to guard our heart. It's another thing, especially men, but I know women deal with this too. When a lady's coming down the aisle and she's not dressed modestly and your flesh wants to look at that, it's like, man, you need to know and look down or turn around and go back around the other aisle and go back. The more you practice that, just like my son, I said, the more you're out here running and running, the easier it gets. And the more you push it, the easier it is to push it. But I want to encourage you in that. Of course, scripture memory is another wonderful thing to be doing. Your flesh is like, oh, I'm too tired to do that, or I'm too old to do that, where we need to say, nope, that's what you're doing. Back onto the college campuses, to another point I wanted to bring up on that and those riots that are going on there. The communists are the ones behind everything like that going on in our country. They use liberals, socialists, Muslims, Democrats, Republicans, Christians, atheists, agnostics. They don't care. They package their propaganda to be customized to appeal to you, whoever you are. If you're a Christian, it's going to be called creation care, but it'll be pushing the radical environmental agenda and using the energies of your life to do that. They're masters at using every group and harnessing the power of those people to work toward their agenda. And it's all about the revolution, like I said. But here's a quote from Vladimir Lenin explaining this over 100 years ago, what Marxism is. And as you're wanting to implement communism, here's what you do. Listen to this. This is what's going on right now in America, and as I'll talk about later, is going to be escalating incredibly before November. Carefully, attentively, and skillfully take advantage of every, even the smallest fissure among the enemy. Seize every, even the smallest opportunity of gaining a mass ally, even though this ally be temporary, vacillating, unstable, unreliable, and conditional. Those who do not understand this fail to understand even a grain of Marxism. Did you get what he was saying there? We'll use anyone. Yeah, maybe they're pathetic people, whatever. We'll use them as long as we can, as much as we can, and take advantage of any cracks in the structure of the culture or anything, any injustice, and we're going to blow it up into something grand and use it. And boy, have they been good at that. But the reason they're behind everything destructive, violent, harmful to mankind is because, again, the communists are Satan's disciples, and they are incredibly committed to the cause. Last week, I spoke for a moment about the life raft analogy, and I was thinking more about that this weekend. And if you're not familiar with that, it's the scenario where they put you in this fictitious world that does not exist in reality, but they tell you, here's the parameters of what's going on. You're in a raft with eight other people, and they'll explain the people. It's a Down syndrome child. It's an elderly 85-year-old man. And they'll go through the crowd there and say, okay, you have to decide which one of those is going to be thrown overboard so they die, so all of you will be saved. You have to kill one person or everybody dies. So they paint this scenario, which has not ever happened in the history of the world. But they do that, and then they force children to make that decision. So it forces them to choose to kill someone, but being told all the while, that's a good thing. Sometime you have to sacrifice the individual for the good of the many. And I talked about that last week. But the more I thought about it, I remember when my college students that worked for me in the restaurants came to me, they said, Mr. Bowers, what would you do? And I said, well, let me think about that. I didn't want to throw out anything. I came back the next day and I said, the scenario is nonsense because you could always have somebody take turns swimming alongside the raft and getting in and out or whatever. But I said, in that scenario, what should happen is that whoever is the strongest, healthiest person in the raft, they should voluntarily say, I'm going to step out of the raft so you all will be safe, and I'm going to try to swim for shore. I might not make it, but I'm willing to sacrifice myself if necessary to protect you. And they said to me, that's crazy. That's the only one that should stay in there. Whoever's healthiest and youngest, he should have thrown out the old person or the Down syndrome. And I said, a world where the strong are taking advantage of the weak is what we've lived in for 6,000 years until America, when they said, no. We are Judeo-Christian culture and country, and God has always the strong lay down their life for the weak. The strong protect the weak. That's why we take care of ladies like we do. The feminists try to act like we think they're less. No, we think they're more. That's why we open the door. If they weren't anything, we'd just slam the door in their face. But we're like, no, they're precious. And so I'm going to take my time to run ahead of them, open the door, say, oh, here you go, ma'am. And do that, because that's the right thing to do. But nothing good has ever happened when you follow the directions they are given in their classes all over this country. And anyway, I thought about that more. I thought, man, that has laid the framework for the slaughter that they want to come at some point, for sure. I'm also shocked how you see the anti-Semitic forces growing all over America and around the world. And it's so interesting to me how even lost people can see in that. Why has everyone in history always been against the Jews, trying to wipe them out, snuff them off from off the earth? It is pretty amazing. You look at that and you go, because Satan knows those were God's chosen people. And his son Jesus came in the line of David to be born, to live a perfect life, to do miracles, to be crucified, and to rise again from the dead. And so it's just, that's amazing to me. But as I see this, I know there's so many different viewpoints on this. I get emails from every side of the spectrum. But I'm just telling you, some of them are not correct. Some of you have emailed and said, Israel's no longer God's chosen people because they broke the covenant with God, and so that erases the covenant. Well, that's faulty reasoning for many reasons. You have broken your covenant with God. I have broken my covenant with God. All of us have committed adultery on God. That means we've been unfaithful to him at some point in our Christian life. We have not served him as King and Lord and Savior. Just like in the book of Hosea, you know, where God gives that example, you're being unfaithful to me. And he gives the whole story there of the prostitute, and he marries this prostitute, and then she runs off, and he comes back and gets her, and to help us see what that is like. Every time you're watching some garbage movie you shouldn't be watching, you're committing adultery on God. Every time you're looking with lust, every time you're lying, every time you do anything you shouldn't do, you're saying, no, I'm the boss, and so then you have dethroned God and put yourself in his place. Thankfully, his covenants are not based on us as far as his faithfulness. He is faithful because he can be nothing else. He will be faithful to the people of Israel. Yes, even when they're wicked sometimes, even when right now they're rebelling against him and they have rejected the Messiah and everything else. But he promised an old man 3,000 years ago, Abraham, I will take care of your descendants, and I have a plan for them. And so, again, some of you were, I think, getting off base in some things, saying, well, the Israel came together not because of God's covenant with Abraham, it's because of the Rothschilds are setting up the Zionist movement to whatever. The Rothschilds might have had a part in whatever, as Hitler had a part in God's plan, and Stalin and Mao, and every single person in history That's what's amazing. God works all things together to accomplish his purposes. No one can defile him. He's not anxiously waiting to see what people will do. He knows exactly the beginning from the end. He, right on his desk, I always explain it to my children like this. On his desk, it's like Adam and Eve in the garden and the Battle of Armageddon all at the same time. He's not waiting for time to come to him or we'll see what happens in the future. It's all there from day one. He can see Adam and Eve right now in the garden, and he can see the Battle of Armageddon, and it's all there. He is outside of time, so this little thing he has put us in, he is not in. And so he's not anxious over anything. And I think as you look at history in light of that, you see World War I clearly in God's book was preparing the land for the people, the Jewish people, to have a land. World War I. World War II was preparing the people for the land. So yes, he allowed Hitler to do what he had to do because he wanted his people to come back to the land that he had given their father Abraham. And that is their land. I don't care. It's the only property in the entire world we know for sure whose it is. People ask, like, well, some of the Palestinians have been there for a while. It doesn't matter. They can open the Bible and see, oh, no, no, from here to here and here to here, God has given that to the Jewish people. So we're trespassing when we are on it. And we need to get off of it. And so, and one of you wrote also on the other side of things saying, Curtis, has God ever undone his request to them to kill every single person in the land when you take it over? Don't allow them to live? The men, women, and children, kill all of them, because otherwise you will be prone to fall into their pagan worship and things like that. So I'll leave that for you to think through and pray about and decide on. But we should all be concerned and sobered when we see momentum worldwide coming against a race of people, the Jewish people, and wanting to snuff them out from the earth. When they're chanting on our college campuses, kidnap more babies, kidnap more babies. A friend of mine was at one of those protests and told me that's one of the things they were chanting. And then bring back the ovens, bring back the ovens on our college campuses. That should just make you shudder inside, because God, I'm telling you, will not put up with that very long. I wanted to address with you the fallacy and the good of the many outweigh the good of the few, which is communism. And I've talked about that before, but Christianity, and that's what America was based on, was all about the individual. Christianity is about the individual. It's an individual relationship with God. You can't be saved communally. You can't be, you know, you're not judged communally. It's you individually standing before a holy God and have to give an account. And I have to stand before a holy God and give an account. And so it was always about the individual. And our founders saw that. So they realized government only exists to protect each individual person's God-given rights. That's the only reason there is a government. And so that's their job to do that. Now, of course, communism, because they're Satan's disciples, has flipped all of that on its head. They go, no, no, no. It's what's best for the good of the many. And so if you have to sacrifice individuals because that's what's best for the good of the many, that's fine. The reason that this is so strategic that they've done that is because once you get people to believe that scenario, then you can abuse the individuals under the guise that, no, this is what's best for the good of the many. And that's been done over and over again. That's what Mao did when he killed 60 to 80 million of the Chinese. And when David Rockefeller went over there and saw that, he said, whatever had to happen to create what you have, it was worth it. That's when you can say, yeah, this is worth it. To get totalitarian control, if you have to sacrifice 70 million people, yeah, that's fine. Because they believe that. They're communist in practice and in belief, and that's who they are. Of course, God knew, and the American founders knew, if you take care of protecting each individual person, the collective will be just fine. You don't have to worry about the collective. You worry about the individuals, and that's what God called us to do here on earth individually too, to love our neighbor one at a time and individually be there for them. Well, just a few more key things here before I wrap it up, but on a positive note, I think they have pulled the trigger too early. I think they had not quite censored the internet as much as they needed to in different things. I'm just, everything I see and everywhere I'm looking, the Tucker Carlsons who have really awakened to see, man, this is rotten and everything. They kicked it off, the COVID and all that, a little too soon. Because it's just, I really see millions of people waking up all over. They hadn't censored everything when they really set for the final approach. And I think hard times are coming for us. I'm going to get more into detail on that in just a second. But I really do think it's going to come to a head, and it is going to be some dramatic things happening, probably before the 24 election this year. But if not, shortly thereafter, by 2030 for sure, because they see what we see, that they're losing a grip. But here's some good news. There's still millions of people in America and around the world, of course, but even in America, that really love and follow Jesus. Millions. Well, he sees that. He loves his children. If we had 3% of America faithfully, obediently serving him, submitting to him, living a Christian life the way it should be lived, I think it's going to turn around. I just do. I know how he is. We see in the Bible stories, you know, if there was 10 people in these two huge cities, Sodom and Gomorrah, would you withhold your judgment? Yes, I would. And when you go, there's 5 million people, would you? Yes, I will. I feel like we're going to go through a rough period, which will be good for us, a really rough period. There's going to be a cleansing, and hopefully, Lord willing, we're going to come out on the other side and have taught our children and grandchildren how to build back a civilization and how to build back biblical principles into everything that is done. And anyway, I'm not positive about that, of course, but I've just seen so many things. Alex Jones, I'm going to play a clip from him in a minute. And I normally don't play some of his stuff because he's so dramatic and crazy sometimes, and then says some inappropriate things sometimes, that I don't want to do that. But as I've listened to him on and off for 15, 20 years, I've noticed that he is so in touch with what's going on. I mean, we're really in tune because he's just reading everything, and he has his staff reading all the government reports and the intelligence reports and different things all over the place. It gives you a very accurate vision of, oh, here's what's getting ready to happen. When I made the film Agenda, I talked to all these people and read all these books of people that were telling us, here's what's coming. Here's what they said was coming. In the 1950s, they said this. In the 1960s, they said this. And all that stuff. And I put it together, and so many people said, how did you know? And I said, because they tell you where they're going, number one. And number two, history does repeat itself. So if you study history, you can see trends and things to see, oh, this is happening again. But anyway, on July 25th, 2001, Alex Jones said, I think our government, because of all the reports they're talking about, commercial airliners being used as weapons, and they need a terrorist attack to pass legislation and stuff. Again, this is 2 months before September 11th, and it's documented. You can see that's when it was posted and everything. He said,
tyranny is enveloping the globe, and the United States is a shining jewel the globalists want to bring down, and they will use terrorism as the pretext to get it done. So that's coming up in the second half of the show. Very important. The point is, if any terrorism comes, it's from this government. And if there was an outside threat like a bin Laden, who was a known CIA asset in the 80s, running the Mujahideen War, and whose family builds all the military bases over in Saudi Arabia right now, and sits on the board of Iridium Satellite, he's the boogeyman they need in this Orwellian phony system. I want the White House numbers up there now. A big part of this solution, after you research all the government terrorism and check out what I'm saying is true, call the White House and tell them, we know the government's planning terrorism. We know Oklahoma City and World Trade Center was terrorism. We know the Joint Chiefs of Staff wanted to blow up airliners, Baltimore Sun. If you do it, we're going to blame you because we know who's up to it. Or if you let some terrorist group do it, like the World Trade Center, we know who to blame. And you could save the planet. I'm calling it Operation Expose the Government Terror.
And you're like, wow, how in the world? Tucker just played that clip a few weeks ago saying, How in the world would you know that clearly? It's because you're reading what the intelligence community is talking about. And then you see, oh, wait, I can see they're setting this up. And they started talking about Osama bin Laden. He's a real threat when he hadn't done anything. And anyway, so being that he has a track record of being pretty accurate and pretty knowledgeable to foretell the future. He had a video this last week I watched, and I had my whole family watch it. And again, we normally don't do that all the time, but I thought he really thinks some hard times are coming soon before the election. And he just said, I know this is happening. Sometimes I make predictions. I think this might happen. I feel like I know this is going to happen. And he kind of lays it out. I'm going to play a clip of that for you right now, just to help you think through things that could be happening. And maybe it won't happen. Maybe we're able to thwart those plans or whatever. But I thought it was important enough to share. It does not mean I condone everything he's ever said or done or does or do, or his views on Israel or anything else. I'm not. I'm just someone that has studied, and I've then watched long enough to go, a lot of the time he is very accurate when he says, I think this could be happening soon. Like the pandemic, he totally predicted it years ahead of time. They're going to have a pandemic, and they're going to force vaccinations. He said all that clearly ahead of time because he was reading their studies that said how effective a pandemic would be and stuff. So it makes sense why he has that ability to do that quite often very accurately. But anyway, watch this clip, and then I'll start wrapping up with some other things that you need to know about.
I'm about to lay out where we are. Thank you for joining us. I'm Alex Jones. It is Friday, May 3rd, 2024. And we can put the full show headline up on screen, please. This is a maximum red alert. And I am been aware of this for a while, so most of you. But it's a statement that has to be made that we are on the cusp going into the first major stages, and the dominoes have already fallen, to trigger civil unrest in every Western country of the world, leading to what will be billed as civil wars that will lead to civil emergency and martial law. There are 100 ways plus to try to describe this and break this down, but I think I should just first talk about the preparation of the last decade for this, really accelerating under Obama, and the social engineers studying the demographics and sociology of every sector, and then tailoring the destabilization plan for the region that the 5i intelligence agencies and tax-free foundations, with their willing accomplices and bought and paid for controlled media, are putting out. So there's a lot of places to start, but let's just go to the defunding of the police, even before Trump was driven from office via election fraud 3.5 years ago. You then saw the Soros-controlled mayors and DAs and attorney generals all across the United States in almost every major city that they control. They control almost every major city, even most sub-cities, to defund the police on average by about 40%, and then to intimidate the police, not to be able to do their job, and to throw the book at them and prosecute them if they make any type of mistake, or even when they don't make a mistake, to make them be paralyzed to not go out and stop crime. And you have laws passed in 10 states and several hundred cities like San Francisco, Portland, Chicago, New York, where even if you steal, depending on the city or state, $1,000, $2,000, up to what, $5,000 in some cities, out of a store, a grocery store, a clothing store, a Walgreens, you name it, that you will not be prosecuted. That's just one example of the destabilization. The defunding of the police in places like Minneapolis, Minnesota, where then the mayor and others hired private security 24 hours a day, millions of dollars a year just for themselves, while cutting the police by 50%. So when you do that, and I saw another story out of Texas yesterday another guy got out and then shot a bunch of police. I mean, you just, and it's just a blip on the radar. Oh, four dead cops, bloop, no big deal. Just bloop, don't even say the cops' names. Just, yeah, four dead cops, you know, six or seven more wounded, bloop, kidnapped woman, rape woman. It's just a little bloop. Did you know something like 14 police were killed in the last week nationwide? Four in one pop from a felon who'd been released over and over again from prison? Yeah, there it is. Four law officers serving warrant or killed, four wounded in a shootout in North Carolina and Georgia and in Texas. And it's just barely in the news. Just bleep. And they did a purge the military with the poison shots and critical race theory and transgenderism. That's exactly what they wanted, to put their people in key positions. So they've got control of most of the military. They're getting control of the police. They've defunded the police. They've defunded it for the citizens. Jurisdictions all over the country. From Illinois to Texas, you say, hey, from midnight to 6 a.m., no police will respond when you're getting broken into. And then if you do one thing wrong or don't say the right thing, when you shoot a burglar breaking in your house, Soros DAs are going to throw your ass under the jail. There's another one, yeah. Three officers shot in Louisiana in fatal standoff with gunmen. I mean, I can't even keep track of it. I didn't even know about that one a couple days ago. So where are their names? Where are their families? Where are their crying wives and widows at press conferences? There is no interest in that because we don't want to humanize the police. But they're just waiting for a Kent State event to happen. They're just waiting for another George Floyd to happen. And Soros has spent billions, and he gets money from the State Department. He's just the front man, so the State Department doesn't have their hands directly in it. The State Department is funding billions and billions to bring illegals in and brainwash them against America, sign them up to vote, while at the same time funding billions of dollars to fund the Tides Foundation and the Sunrise Foundation and all these other groups and to bail these people out when they're violent. Because the globalists want Americans fighting with each other. They want to turn the heat up ahead of the summer of rage that's coming that'll make 2020 look tame in comparison. I'm guaranteeing, not predicting, guaranteeing. Then they'll get enough incidences and enough Southern Poverty Law Center, ADL, crisis actors, which we know they send in, like Charlottesville, to stir things up enough, and then there will be false flags. And false flags can be a crazy person you wind up, or it can be purely staged, or it can be done by a corporate group or a mercenary group, but it's going to be something that's going to be blamed on conservatives and nationalists. We saw that in the June National Security Directive by President Biden, where he said the number one terror threat is what? White supremacists, and that they're causing the most crime in America, which is completely fake statistic and just asinine. Then you heard there's a rash, an epidemic of whites killing Asians. Doesn't even really exist. Just totally pulled out of the FBI's rear end. Then the FBI started 2 years ago in over 100 major cities, 102 major cities, the 102 biggest cities, stop reporting crime statistics, period, so they could say crime hasn't gone up. They're priming the pump and setting the battle space for the false flags that are going to be committed against black grocery stores, black colleges, black churches. About a month before the election, I'd say about 155 About 155 days from now is when I'm guessing, and us putting this out may make them change the battle plan. About 155 days from now, then synagogues are going to get blown up, truck bombed. Federal buildings will then get hit, truck bombed. And then civil emergency is going to be declared. Trump is going to be blamed, and they have no intention of even letting us go to the ballots. Now, that's one plan scenario I see. They've got a bunch of others. They got a handful of cards. But the ace of spades is the false flag. But they know people kind of saw through the George Floyd thing, and three times the numbers of blacks are set to vote for Trump and double the number of Hispanics in many polls, more than half Hispanics. In many polls, upwards of 50% of black males, 30% of black females. That scares the hell out of the left. So they're going to need to hit them to try to then blame Trump. But that's not enough because people see through that. That's why they gave $6 billion to Iran, who's working behind the scenes with the CIA and Mossad, to then train and finish the training, and that was the final payment. That's why the West has given, under Obama and now under Biden, it was like $100 billion to Iran, about $99 billion last time I checked, for this long-term project. And it's all plausible deniability. They're like, wink, wink. Biden gives the final payment of $6 billion on a month before, 29 days before, the October 7th. Israel stands down for 7.5 hours. Hamas is told, oh, you're going in to get hostages so that you can get our people back. But that was all a setup. Obviously, then the leaders of Hamas outside the country knew they were about to get tens of billions more in funding as aid. They allow the sacrifice and execution of their people. Those that survive, millions are loaded, and they're finishing the pier right now. And Biden announced 2 days ago they're going to bring 1 million of the Gaza survivors, and a bunch of them will be terrorists, to the United States. And that'll be happening before the election. Perfect timing. And so the CIA, MI6, the EU, Interpol, the Iranians, they're all in on it together, 100%, no doubt. Soros then funds the left for the uprisings. The right wing sees it, goes out and fights them. That turns up the temperature to see the sides all colliding and fighting. And then the intelligence agencies, and they might use German intelligence. They've used them for Oklahoma City. They might use British intelligence. Mossad kind of got caught with hands in cookie jar on 9/11, so they might, you know, pass the ball on this one. I don't know which group's going to carry it out. Might be a Merck group they hire. They might be able to get some mentally ill people to do some of the attacks, wind-up toys. And you've got all the preparation for this ready. So you get everybody fighting over Israel and Palestine, and then really it's just a communist uprising cover to get that all formed and ready, to get the right wing to come out and play and be part of the whole thing. You'll have provocateurs, ADLs, in the Poverty Law Center dressed up, obviously saying horrible things, doing terrible things. You'll have some real idiots to do it. That'll raise the temperature more. And then out of that, it won't be called martial law, but it'll be called a civil emergency. Then they'll claim the Russians hit the power grid, and part of the power grid will go down. And then they'll claim the Russians have hit the banks. And then they'll tank the economy, claiming it's the Russians that did it, and part of the power grid, and you're in full martial law. And they're going to have communists just green-lit, just burning courthouses, burning buildings, just torching everything. So you'll have cities on fire everywhere, just people looting, murdering. The police will all be, you know, hiding in the police stations. People will be firing grenades into the police stations. The 30 million illegal aliens, it's not 20 million, it's not 10 million. The 30 million illegal aliens who all got smartphones from the UN and the 10 million military-age men they brought in, they'll go out and hit all the targets they're supposed to hit. And it's the end of the country. So that's where we are. And that's why Bernie Sanders and the rest of them are out there saying, this is Biden's Vietnam. They're just replaying the uprisings of the 60s, but they're going to make it far worse. And by the way, the Democrats have all said, we've got a bill introduced to strip the military power from Trump if he's president-elect during uprisings. They said this a few months ago. And they said, we believe a civil war is imminent, all the movies and all the shows. And they were talking about doing it when he's president-elect because they want to wait and see if they can steal it. But now they're so sure he's going to win because they don't have enough dead people and people out of district to vote that they're going to go ahead and do it before. Now, remember, they can launch it after he's president-elect or they can do it before, but they're never going to let him, unless we stop them, we can talk about how we do that, get into the office. So you're about to see the movie Civil War for real. And I just think you all better get right with Jesus now and understand this is it. This is the end of the United States of America. If the people at the Justice Department and at the Pentagon and at the CIA who are not read in on this but are read in on part of it and realize what's happening, don't go public with press conferences, expose the whole thing now, and let's just stop this, all right? Because I've studied history, and I will tell you, if you think going along with this by knowing it's happening, keeping your mouth shut, and you work in a big corporation or you work in an intelligence agency, you're the first people, once they secure their takeover, that they are going to kill. They're not going to put you in prison. They're not going to spend time setting you up. They're going to kill you, and you know that. So if you want to be like Jens Rome and the SA on Night of the Long Knives, be my guest. But I'm telling you, this is happening.
Again, you can take some of that with a grain of salt or whatever. It's a different perspective. But again, I think from listening to him, I know that's what the communists are working toward. They are working toward violent revolution. I know they're in positions of power in almost every single thing in our country, from our government to our schools to the intelligence agencies. You know, Comey and Brennan both admitted to having been communists, our last heads of the CIA and the FBI stuff. So they're embedded in throughout our country. And the agenda he just outlined in that clip is exactly what they want to do. And that's even what they do at the end. Once they've taken over, they do execute everyone that helped them take over because they don't trust them. And you look at the 20th century, they did that over and over again. But I tell you that not to make you fearful or frightened, but to go, you do need to be thinking like that in case that scenario happens and maybe enough people will awaken watching his videos and stuff and stop this from happening. But I don't know, protecting your family, being prepared, having food, supplies. I encourage you to go to the shooting range at least once a month where you could engage in that way if you needed to, if you felt God wanted you to. I know God has put the Christian men in the world and in this country to stand up for those who cannot protect themselves and for their own wives and children. I know that 100%. It's every Christian man's duty to be ready to defend what God has given him if he feels that's what God wants him to do at the right time or whatever. So hopefully nothing will happen. But I just, in my gut, feel like I think we're on the cusp of something. And maybe it'll be before the election. Maybe it won't be. But it's by 2030, I think major things will have at least been tried in black swan events and things. Because again, these satanic people that hate God and hate us and hate freedom, they're not stopping until they've been stopped. And we need to pray God helps us stop them and their foolishness and their evil plans, destroying our children and everything. But we read in Psalm chapter 2, and I'll start wrapping up here with this. Psalm chapter 2, why do the heathen rage and the people imagine a vain thing? God talks about this exact thing. The kings of the earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed. It's humorous, saying, let us break their bands asunder and cast away their cords from us. That's what's happening right now in our government, in all the rebellious leadership positions of the globalists and everything else. They are shaking their fist in God's face, saying, let us break his bands asunder. We don't want his morality. We don't want his rules. We don't want his heaven and hell. We are going to be as God. We are going to create God. We are going to create a utopia on earth, and on, all the counterfeit things Satan is trying to pull them into so he can suck them down to hell with him. But here's what God says. He that sitteth in the heavens shall laugh. The Lord shall have them in derision. That's what I've been praying about since 2008. When Obama came to office, the day he was elected, my mother called me crying and said, he's going to wreck our country. And I said, Mom, it's the best thing that's ever happened to us, because if we don't wake up now, we'll never wake up. And I started praying, and I've prayed since 2008, God, help them in their pride to push things too fast, too hard, where it exposes to everyone how evil they really are. And I feel God is answering those prayers, and he's going to have them in derision where they're destroying themselves and don't even know it. Then shall he speak unto them in his wrath and vex them in his sore displeasure. Yeah, he's got it all under control, and he loves us. Don't you forget that. He's not hanging us out to dry. We deserve what is coming. Why? Because we forgot God. We did. And you might say, well, I haven't forgotten. Yeah, but we didn't stand up for him like we should have when they were removing him from every part of our culture. We should have risen up then and said, no way. I just want to remind you, everything the world has to offer is fool's gold. All of it. Young people, listen to me. Yes, it looks good. because that's how it is sold to you as gold when it really isn't. It's a counterfeit. You don't know it till you take the first bite or you do the first thing and you start to realize, uh-oh, but he hopes to get his talons in you, Satan, by having deceived you into trying, taking a bite of the fruit, looking at the girl, drinking the first drink, using the first drugs, whatever it is. It's all a world that looks like it's gold, but behind every shiny thing is a hook. It's like how we catch fish. We put a little shiny thing next to that hook and spin it through the water, and the fish says, oh, that looks pretty. Boom. And it's hooked. And then all of a sudden it goes, oh, I don't want that anymore. And Satan says, I don't care if you want it or not. I've got you now. And so we need to be so, so careful. I'm going to quote for you a poem I learned 30, 40 years ago in college, because it so relates to today. It's over 100 years old. It's by Rudyard Kipling, and it's called Gods of the Copybook Headings. And it's a beautiful poem. It's my favorite one. And what he does in this poem, he's like Father Time, and he's watching history unfold. And he sits there and watches it, and he's comparing the gods of the marketplace, which are the get-rich-quick schemes of man, everything that promises you a lot, all the gold that looks like gold, but it's fool's gold. He compares that to the gods of the copybook headings. And what those are, early in American history, all our students had copybooks. And what they were is they were a little book that on the top line of each page, there'd be a maxim, a proverb, the wages of sin is death. And to learn their penmanship and to learn the truth, the students would write that over and over again on every line of the page till they got to the bottom. So at the end, they would have gotten better at their penmanship, but they also would remember and never forget the wages of sin is death. And so it was a wonderful thing. But he compares those things of truth that, from God, that are timeless, that never change, doesn't matter how many fads come along or how many things the world says, oh, we've got a better way of doing things. But he compares those throughout history, and it's really powerful. And it sounds like it was written today, but it was written 110 years ago. But here it goes. As I pass through my incarnations in every age and race, I make my proper prostrations to the gods of the marketplace. Peering through reverent fingers, I watch them flourish and fall. But the gods of the copybook headings, I noticed outlasted them all. We were living in trees when they met us, and they showed us each in turn that water would certainly wet us and fire would certainly burn. But we found them lacking in uplift, vision, and breadth of mind. So we left them to teach the gorillas while we followed the march of mankind. We moved as the spirit listed. They never altered their pace, being neither cloud nor windborne like the gods of the marketplace. But they always caught up with our progress, and presently word would come that a tribe had been wiped off its ice field and the lights had gone out in Rome. With all the hopes our world is built on, they were utterly out of touch. They denied that the moon was Stilton, which is a cheese. They denied she was even Dutch. They denied that wishes were horses, and they denied that a pig had wings. So we followed the gods of the market who promised us these beautiful things. When the Cambrian measures were forming, they promised perpetual peace. They swore if we gave them our weapons, the wars of the tribes would cease. But when we disarmed, they sold us and delivered us bound to our foe. And the gods of the copybook heading said, stick to the devil, you know. On the first feminine sandstones, we were promised the fuller life, which started by loving our neighbor and ended by loving his wife, till our women had no more children and our men lost reason and faith. And the gods of the copybook heading said, the wages of sin is death. In the Carboniferous epoch, we were promised abundance for all by robbing selected Peter to pay for collective Paul. But though we had plenty of money, there was nothing our money could buy. And the gods of the copybook heading said, if you don't work, you die. Then the gods of the market tumbled, and their smooth-tongued wizards withdrew, and the hearts of the meanest were humbled and began to believe it was true that all is not gold that glitters, and two makes four. And the gods of the copybook headings limped up to explain it once more. As it will be in the future, it was at the birth of man, there are only four things certain since social progress began. That a dog returns to his vomit, and that a sow returns to her mire, and the fool's burnt bandaged finger goes wobbling back to the fire. And after all this is accomplished and the brave new world begins, when all men are paid for existing and no man must pay for his sins, as surely as water will wet us and as surely as fire will burn, the gods of the copybook headings with terror and slaughter return. You cannot mock God. When you forget God, you turn on God, you think He is not God, you will pay. The gods of the copybook headings with terror and slaughter will return, because you reap what you sow. We cannot defy that. If you wanted to, you cannot. Why? Because there's a God, and He's in total control. And He hates the wicked and what they're doing. And He loves when His children stand with courage against the evil and share the truth and live consistent with what they say they believe. I want to encourage you in that. I think we got some rough times coming, but I just feel, and I don't know this, I'm not, I just feel that He is going to, through the hard times, bring us out the other side. And I'm just praying that He will do that. If it's His will, He knows what's best always. But toughen up, do hard things, pray for wisdom, batten down the hatches. And our verse for this week is Hosea 4:6. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Because thou hast rejected knowledge, I will also reject thee, that thou shalt be no priest to me. Seeing thou hast forgotten the law of thy God, I will also forget thy children. We need to be faithful to obey God's laws and to not be destroyed for lack of knowledge. That's what Agenda Weekly is all about. We're trying to give knowledge and wisdom and understanding the best we can, so that you won't be destroyed, that you'll go, no, I saw it coming, I was warned, and I've prepared, my house is in order, and I'm ready for the storm that's coming, because it's built upon the rock. I appreciate you so much, thankful for you. Please keep me in your prayers as I travel and do things, and I'm so grateful God's allowed me to do this and to speak with you all each week. And until next week, God bless you.